once while listening to an episode of Star Talk, the podcast that's hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. He said something that really stuck with me on the subject of extraterrestrial life. He started by asking, quote, "Life doesn't exist anywhere but Earth? That is like taking a cup of ocean water and saying that there aren't any whales in the ocean." He went on to explain that the cup of ocean water represents the amount of space that we've explored. Call me a tinfoil hat wearer, but I've always been open to the idea of alien life since I was a little girl. I think it all started when my grandmother told me of a story she couldn't explain, where her and my grandfather were driving home on a back road late one night. Something huge and brightly lit in the sky followed them for several miles as they made their way down the dark road. She said it was close enough for her to see it was circular in shape and it had many lights around it. She also said that she and my grandpa were more scared than they had ever been before, and that she felt silly telling about it after it happened, since she couldn't rationally explain what it was that she saw. Now, I could go on and on about the countless sightings of odd and seemingly unexplainable things people have seen in the night sky throughout our history. Some have been debunked and some that aren't. But I'm going to tell you about one alleged abduction story that has remained one of the most credible extraterrestrial encounters in American history since 1973, and it took place right here in Mississippi. This is Crooked Hospitality, a show all about the crime, legends, and lore of Mississippi's history. I'm your host, Mae Smith, and this is the story of the Pascagoula alien abduction of 1973. In the fall of 1973, Calvin Parker was just 19 years old and had recently moved to the Pascagoula area. He was engaged, and by October, his wedding was only a month away. He had an older friend who was a local man named Charles Hickson, who was 42 years old at the time, and had helped him get a job at the local F.B. Walker & Sons shipyard, where Hickson was a foreman at. So the two men saw each other quite a bit. Calvin, although just 19 years old, had a pretty good idea of what he wanted in life. He said, quote, "I wanted to get married, wanted to have children, wanted to have grandchildren, wanted to buy a house, retire, and fish." By all accounts, Calvin was well on his way to achieving this for himself. On October 11th, the two men were at work for the day when Calvin's older friend Hickson came over to him and asked him if he would like to go fishing later after work. Calvin told him he would, but he didn't have any fishing gear with him. Hickson, who was always ready to go fishing, told him it was okay because Calvin could just borrow some of his stuff that afternoon. Calvin was flattered because Southern men are not well known for letting people use their fishing gear. So Calvin agreed, and when the working day was over, the two men set off to a local fishing spot. After the sunset, the lights around them came on and attracted a lot of bugs. The bugs were swarming them so bad, they decided to move to another spot, one with less lights around to attract the bugs. Octobers in South Mississippi are hot, humid, and the bugs are seriously unbearable at times, especially out by the water. So this isn't anything unusual for them to want to move to a different spot. The two men went back near the shipyard, where there was a nice spot on the Pascagoula River to fish, and it wasn't as well lit as the first spot. When they pulled up, Calvin noticed the posted signs and told Hickson maybe they shouldn't be there, but Hickson assured him it would be fine since he fished there all the time. So they gathered their gear and walked towards the river and began to fish. Parker noticed a boat floating across the river that was made of steel, and he had thought to himself, how do they make something made of steel float on the water? But then, suddenly everything around him lit up blue with those flashing lights that give all of us anxiety. It was pretty obvious that the cops had pulled up behind them, so he turned to Hickson and told him, "You lied to me. Now we are in trouble and are about to go to jail." The two men stood up to face the police, but when they turned around, they didn't see any police cars. Instead, what they saw was a long, oval-shaped craft hovering about 2 feet from the ground and was emitting bright blue lights. He then saw three bulky creatures walking towards them, but he but he couldn't see them very well due to the blinding blue lights coming from behind them. Before he knew it, two of the creatures had grabbed Hickson and one grabbed him. They carried the two men to the craft. Once aboard, they were injected with what Parker describes as a go-to-hell shot. He describes the feeling it gave him as taking him from absolute terror to complete peace. He said he didn't care what happened to him after that. Parker describes being taken down a long hallway into a room and being placed onto a glass examination table. He was able to get a better view of the creature that was holding him, and he said he was gray and wrinkled. Once he was on the exam table, the being left the room. Suddenly, something square and small, about the size of a deck of cards, came out of the ceiling and began to circle around him, making clicking noises. Later in an interview, he said he had recently gotten an MRI, and the clicking noises were very similar to the MRI machine, but not quite as loud. After a few moments, it shot back up into the ceiling. It was at this time that a different, smaller creature entered the room, one that he describes as being female. She was pretty, which put him at ease, and very human-like, with the exception of her two middle fingers, which were much longer than normal. He couldn't move his body, but was able to roll his head toward her. She didn't say a word, and then suddenly pulled his mouth open and stuck her fingers down his throat, making him gag. She even cut his throat doing this, making it bleed. She pulled her hand back out, and Parker said he got the impression that she did not want to hurt him anymore. She began to make a sound that is like a low growl. He describes this later as the sound that alligators make when they are trying to mate. This is when the same creature that had brought him to the craft entered the room again and brought him back to the riverbank. He says that to this day, he thinks that that creature was actually a robot. Parker says that this is really where the story starts for him, that this is where his life went to hell. With both of them back on the riverbank and alone, Parker's first instinct was to not tell anyone what had happened, and Hickson agreed. They were both so shaken up and still in shock as they made their way back to their car and saw that the passenger window was shattered with cracks throughout it, but when he opened the door, the glass fell out everywhere. They finally just got in, and at first, the car wouldn't start. He said that the car was fairly new, and he had never had issues starting it before. They finally got the engine to turn over, and when it did, it sounded pretty rough. As the two men rode in the quiet darkness, Hickson broke the silence, turning to Parker, and he said he had changed his mind, that he thinks that they should tell someone. Despite Parker's protest, Hickson dialed the number to the Keesler Air Force Base that was located a few miles away in Biloxi. He was told that they didn't handle UFO sightings anymore, and they should contact their local authorities. So they did. They drove to the Jackson County Sheriff's Department, where they were both questioned separately and then put in a room alone together and were secretly recorded. If the goal here was to record them putting together their story to try and keep fooling the police, it didn't work. Instead, what they heard was the two men talking about how scared they were about what had just happened to them. At one point, one of the men began to pray. After the cops heard the recording, they began to take the men more seriously. The police asked the two men not to say anything, and they agreed not to. However, when they got to work at the shipyard the next morning, everyone already knew. To make things even worse, there were nearly 200 reporters swarming the shipyard waiting to speak with them. Just a few days later, astronomers and ufologist Dr. J. Allen Hynek and Dr. James Harder arrived in Pascagoula to speak with the two men about their experience. Dr. Hynek was the scientific advisor for three major UFO studies undertaken by the U.S. Air Force. These were Project Sign, Project Grudge, and most famously known, Project Blue Book. Parker would end up losing his job at the shipyard because of the publicity. People just wouldn't leave him alone. He and his fiancée moved back up north a ways to Laurel, Mississippi, where he was originally from. He said it wouldn't be long before reporters would show up there, and the company he worked for would get tired of it, and he would end up losing his job. He even began to go by a different name, Randy, and hid from the press. He would pack up his family each time a reporter found him. A good example of how differently the locals reacted to this event is given by a local woman named Rebecca Davis. She was about 12 years old at the time it all took place, and said that she was staying with a friend not long after it happened when she asked her friend's dad why he was putting aluminum foil on their windows in their house. He responded by saying that it was to prevent the aliens from getting to their brains. When she got back home, she asked a family member about the abduction, and she was sternly told never to talk about it or ask about it again, as her family, like many others in this area, were devout Southern Baptists. Now, despite the two men going through a series of different tests like voice stress analysis, polygraphs, even hypnosis sessions, many of their family and friends refused to believe their story. Calvin said that he eventually got to the point where he stopped talking about it altogether. He told a story in an interview with Country Roads magazine where, after the abduction first happened, his father-in-law didn't believe him at all, and even went as far to tell his daughter not to marry Calvin. Sometime later, however, he came to Calvin and apologized. He told him that yes, he did not believe him at first, but since then, he had seen some stuff and had no doubt in his story. The entire event would cause so much stress on Calvin's marriage that he and his wife actually divorced for a period of time before they got remarried. He gives his wife credit for being the inspiration for him to open up about it all these years later. After Hickson passed away in 2011, Calvin began to speak more openly about it all and even wrote books that were featured on Amazon's bestseller list, and it all led him to begin attending conferences where he shares his experience. In 2019, the city of Pascagoula placed a historical marker to memorialize the site where the abduction occurred on the river. Calvin says he was overcome with emotion when it went up, saying that after all these years, to finally have his story where he was ridiculed over, to finally be legitimized, made him cry. In recent years, several locals have come forward with their own experiences of seeing strange lights in the sky on or around October 11th of 1973. Many of them say they hesitated to come forward because they feared being ridiculed. Now, I'll be the first to admit that I do believe we aren't the only ones out there in space. Have we been contacted by extraterrestrials? I'm not sure. But we have the evidence that shows that some things just can't be explained, and I'm willing to keep an open mind, and I hope that you are too. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Crooked Hospitality. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow the show and leave us a review. I'll see y'all next time.